Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hey, mate, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. I don't know if I say welcome back or whatever because that's awkward, but tell us a little bit about you, Adam. You're from?
Yeah, I'm Adam from AH Fencing. We're a security fencing contractor based in Brizzy and Melbourne.
Yep.
Started the business 7 years ago with me and my best mate, Matt. We went to school together, have known each other since we were 5 years old. Basically off the back of a business we were working for went under, and we thought, fuck it, we're not going to work someone else anymore. Let's give it a crack ourselves. And little did we know that just because we knew how to build fences does not mean we know how to run a business. And no one ever told us that.
Fancy that.
Yeah, yeah. So we...
How long did it take you to figure out?
Oh, fucking pretty quick, eh? Pretty quick.
Or you're still figuring out both of them.
Yeah. Now I think we're more businessmen than we are fences, you know? Like we don't... I don't deal with fencing at all anymore.
When was the last time you built a fence?
A long time ago now.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What about business partner?
Yeah, even longer, I reckon.
Oh,
yeah.
Called him out. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so we started the business in 2017. You know, we had both worked for security fencing contractors in the past. So what we knew and what our bread and butter was commercial security fencing for, you know, tier one and two builders in Brisbane. But we had no capital, no money behind us at all. We had $3,000 in a bank account. And so,
Clever. Yeah, that's the best way to start a business, I think.
Yeah. Bootstrapping.
Yeah. Yeah. No money, no work, but know how to build a fence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then we went onto Wix and we built ourselves a free website over the Christmas holidays, went out and bought a $3,000 ute and, started looking for residential fencing jobs because that's all we could afford to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had no idea how to price them. We were just working out, what's the materials going to cost and then how much do we want to make today? $500, sweet, just add that on top. And that's not a very scalable way to run a business.
No, I think all the LinkedIn experts will tell you that's actually the wrong way to scale a business, but then half of them haven't built a business either. So maybe that is the way that you do it at the start. And when I started, I was happy to dig a hole.
Right? Yeah.
Like I didn't have much work. And so if you got me to work, I'd be like, listen, I really want $100 an hour with the machine. But if you want to pay me 70, I'm happy to come for that.
Yeah.
So while it's not a good way to run a business, I think it might be the best way to start a business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, we've always known that we can back ourselves and that's what we're doing. When you start a business, you're just backing yourselves. Mm-hmm. Especially when, you know, Matt and I were the only employees of the business. And so we knew we could make money. And to be fair, like the first couple of months of the business, we actually did all right because it was just us. We had no overheads and we were making a bit of money. Mm-hmm. It was when we started to bring on employees is when the risk went up. And then we inevitably started losing money pretty quickly.
Yeah, I've been saying the only solutions that a business or a company has is its employees. The only problems it really has, it's employees.
Yeah.
You know, the people are what make it, break it, and cause all of the problems, but are the only people who will get you to the solution.
Yes.
So what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, you just said yourself, first few months, make shitloads of money. Build some fences, have a bit of fun, everything's gravy, employ someone, and now all of a sudden problems start.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And, you know, some advice I got given early on was that, you know, your business is a reflection of who you are as a person. And when I first heard that, I was like, what the fuck does that mean? I had no idea what it meant. But it really is true. And as the business has grown and I've grown as a person, I've realized more and more the business really is a reflection of who Matt and I are as people. You know, if Matt and I can't have hard conversations with people, then shit's going to go wrong in the business. You know, our people can't have hard conversations with other people. You know, we're not going to be able to hold people to a high standard. And so my focus...
It can also be the other side of that too, because that's the side that most people focus on. You know, who you are as a leader and this and that, but then you're saying who you are as a person. It's also when someone needs a weekend off, a long weekend for their wedding, or it's when something's happening to their husband or something's happening to their wife or kids, that all of a sudden the other side of you and Matt will pop up, which is, yeah, sure, just go, you know, it's all right, take the afternoon off, go to footy. But that's almost an expectation these days of what you have to do. But that's also the reflection of you guys and how far you're willing to go for people. I'm sure you've got story after story about things that you've done for employees that are above and beyond that aren't recognised apart from when you look in the mirror.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I guess I probably didn't mention that point that when Matt and I did decide to start the business, apart from having financial freedom, the main reason was we wanted to create a workplace that people enjoyed coming to, because it's not something Matt and I had ever experienced. You know, we went from business to business with just shitty cultures. No one enjoyed being there. And all it was about was building fences. And like, as much as I love fencing, like how motivating is it to build fences year after year? You know, eventually it's not really enough. And so that's what we set out from the very, very start to do, is create a workplace that people enjoy coming to.
You know, some people have like the nine pillars, or, you know, the company mottos on the wall that, you know, the...
Yeah, yeah. I mean...
You almost, you know, have to touch them as you walk into the office. Is that yours? Do you have those?
Yeah, we've got our core values. We've got our mantra. I mean, like, look, this is all like recent stuff. We obviously didn't know any of this at the start. We were like, what's a core value? And we did get told it's important to have core values, and they existed in our hearts, right? But they weren't up on any walls.
So I don't have core values yet, right? Yeah. And I know a lot of people... quite a few of my friends have their written down core values and what it means to them, and to actually sort of crystallize that, you know. And I don't know if at some point that's a wank, but at some point it's actually pretty cool and pretty good that, you know, you're trying to lean into that as well, and trying to make sure that you do your company and how it performs is actually performing to some sort of standard.
Yeah.
You know, have you found any difference with them? I'm happy to say that I'm wrong without them.
Yeah. I mean, look, we created a set of core values in maybe year three, because we got told that's what you do. And then they were just a bit of a wank. They were just four words written on a wall that didn't really mean anything. You know, it said excellence, accountability, integrity, and like...
Excellence.
What does that mean?
Do you lean into the mic when you say it? Like,
what? Ooh. Yeah, excellence. Excellence.
Yeah, see? Yeah.
And what do those really mean? And we've just recently revamped them all.
So these ones would probably be the real ones now.
Yeah, the ones that we've got now are the real ones, right? And they actually are what resonate with us, and they are who we are as a business and how everyone shows up. And part of the reason we did that was, you know, we expanded to Melbourne, and Melbourne was just running so much more efficiently than Brisbane. And what we sort of worked out was we really needed some guiding principles to guide the company consistently everywhere, you know, because we had guys working in Brisbane with multiple project managers operating off their own set of principles, and same down in Melbourne, albeit we're all trying to get to the same end result. They're all got their own little tweaks on it. So we recently...
What are your core values? What are they?
Our core values are...
Give them to me. Yeah. Excellence, of course.
Yeah, yeah. No, one of them's own it.
Yeah.
Find a way.
Yeah.
Lead from the front and never settle. And so...
I can see them working, yeah.
Yeah, good. You know, owning it means owning everything. Owning your fuck-ups, owning the good stuff you do, owning everything that you do in and outside of the workplace.
Have you read the art of extreme ownership or whatever that
yeah,
is.
Of course, Jocko. Yeah, Jocko Willink. Yeah. Yeah, of course. And it goes exactly. It goes into that. And it's about not being a victim as well, right? Oh. It's owning everything that happens in your day you've created in some way or another. And if you do have no control over it, you do have control over how you react to that situation.
Yeah, correct.
That's the only thing we really have true control over in our lives is ourselves and how we react to things. So, those four core values make up our mantra of chasing perfection. And we've got chasing perfection written on all our utes, all of our hard hats, on the walls of our warehouses and offices. It's written everywhere.
How long's that been around?
A few years now. A few years. And it popped up because people would ask us, why do you stand out from your competitors? What makes you different? And it was really hard to just say one thing or another. It's hard to say, oh, we do really good gates or, you know.
Yeah, have you seen me put a screw in off the screw, the best.
Exactly, yeah.
Way better than anyone else.
Yeah, and what we ended up saying was like, we're just chasing perfection across the board. And we just kept using this term, chasing perfection. And then we realized, well, we really keep saying this thing. Maybe we should put it up on the walls. Maybe it actually means something. And it's become our mantra, and it's in everything that we do now. And, you know, it's something that we hold each other accountable to. Like, if someone does, it's hard to go to a job and leave it not perfect when you've got chasing perfection written on your ute and your hard hat.
Yeah, you look like a bit of a dill.
Yeah.
You know, like, if you leave it really like shit, just with rubbish everywhere, you'd be like, dude, that's actually a bad job, let alone perfection.
Yeah.
You know, there's a long way in between bad and perfection.
Yeah. We've got a couple of shipping containers we put on some of our sites, and they've got chasing perfection written on the sign.
Oh,
and it didn't look good when the P fell off the chasing perfection one day. We had to get that back up straight away because it looked pretty fucking average having chasing perfection without it.
I don't know. It creates a different business model though. Like, it is a different business model without the P in perfection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We're chasing something that's pretty important.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe you shouldn't charge for it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so sign writer got a quick phone call on that one.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah. Had to put some screws in it, not just glue. They weren't chasing perfection.
They're going to be quite funny. I like that.
So. Yeah, so those are our core values, and, you know, they really do resonate with us now, and we bring them up at every single monthly meeting we have with the team. We bring them up, we go over them again, and whenever someone is, you know, we need to have a meeting with someone because they're not performing, the first thing we say is like, all right, where are they falling short in our core values? And we bring it back to the core values so that we're really living and breathing those four values, and it's a standard across the company, across Australia.
So they're not only, you know, and I don't want to sound like a set of wank, they're not a guiding light, but they can also be a little bit of a stick, you know, if you're saying, well, hang on a second, if you aren't owning things across the board, we actually want people to own it. So, like, are you right for us? Like, what are you going to do? Are you going to start owning shit?
Yeah.
Or?
Yeah, 100%. And that's it's about holding each other accountable to those standards, right? And whenever someone signs up with AH Fencing, we start a new employee. That's part of the induction process, as we go through those core values in detail. And, you know, even in the interview process, we go through them and make sure that these people are aligned with them. And that's probably something that's really big that's changed now.
Do you do the interviewing?
For the higher level roles in management, I do.
Yeah. And how does that go when you go through that? Like, you know, are you sitting down and saying, you know, you got to own it, and someone's sitting there going, I've walked into this job and they're saying I've got to own everything and I'm chasing an erection and this is like, I don't know what I've signed up for, but, you know.
Yeah, yeah. No, like, okay, look, we bring up the core values in, like, interview number three.
Oh, good.
But what we do in interview one is, like, we've structured some questions to try and find out if they're aligned with those values without asking them directly. Because if you ask them, hey, are you aligned with their values, they're obviously going to say yes. And so, you know, we ask them about all different sorts of things.
It's so hard because you sit there and you've got two different sides of the business, right? Like, when someone quits, you go, like, you'd have operations managers or project managers or something. When someone quits, you're like, I need a guy to fill this hole right now.
Yeah.
Because I'm so stretched thin. And then you've got to sit down and you've got to give him a questionnaire in a meeting or an interview and say, hey, can you do this? And then I have to go through 10 different questionnaires, and then I have to find the right one, and then all the while the jobs are turning to shit, and you've got, I don't know, project manager number A, he's now running six jobs instead of three, and life's turning to shit pretty quick.
But I'm sure you know it's fucking important.
Like, it is.
If you don't go through that process.
And I'm just here and now, because we go through the same things, and then we interview everyone, but then, you know, candidate A, can't make it until Wednesday. So then everyone else comes in on Monday and then Wednesday, and then you don't have management in until Fridays to discuss what's happening.
Yeah.
And then it's Friday afternoon by the time you get around to it. Should have really call everyone before the weekend. No, we wait until Monday. You call someone and then they're like, I took another job. And you go.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, man, we put a lot of effort into our recruiting these days, and it hasn't always been that way. COVID was a big push for that, because as soon as there was that labour shortage, and we started putting all of our marketing money into trying to attract employees that aligned with us.
How'd you go?
Yeah, awesome. Like, when we put an ad up on Seek or something now, we get hundreds and hundreds of people applying, and
had a few hundred in, like, I think it was 2 days for a role that I put up.
How good is it?
A few hundred. Yeah. And like, I got mates of mine who were sitting down and they're like, oh, I put up an ad and I didn't get anyone that responded. I'm like, what do you mean you didn't get anyone to respond? Like, I put up 3 different ads and got 1,000 people, and I'm thinking of getting an agency to go through the resumes to shortlist them, you know, so that we can do that. And you're not getting one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but just so you know, on the back end of that, marketing online is stupid. Social media is stupid. You know, don't put yourself out there. You know, podcasts are a wank. Don't do any of that sort of stuff. But you get a few hundred applications.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly.
You put money into recruiting and everything else like that. You know, it's so hard to compete with the big tier ones. It'd be hard to compete with you with mining.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, like, you can build fences for you guys in Brizzy, or you can build fencing for BHP.
Yeah.
You know, or even if you're not even building fences, you can just go there and do a labouring job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, you've got to stand out, right? You know, people say there's a labour shortage and it's hard to find good people, and it should be hard to find good people. You know, if you want to get the top 5% of people working in the industry, you've got to be a top 5% business. And if you're not doing that, then
you know, listen to him.
Yeah.
I tell you what, that's a short for AH.
Yeah, exactly.
And now we're talking.
Exactly. That's right.
Top 5.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Five business and top, yeah, that's what it was. Top 5%.
Yeah, exactly. You know, top 5% of people are going to want to work for the top 5% of businesses, and you've got to give people a reason to want to come along on your journey. You know, and it's not giving people a reason to want to work for you.
Can I take the piss again?
Yeah.
Yeah, chasing the erection.
Chasing the erection. That's right.
That's where we get it done. That's good. That's good. That should be what the actual podcast name is. Everyone will be like, "What the fuck? Chasing the erection." Anyway, yeah, I'm there.
Yeah,
you shouldn't have told that story at the beginning.
I know,
it should have
I
been
know.
At the end.
Yeah, yeah. No, you've got to give people a reason to want to come along the journey with you. And it's not about coming to work for you. You've got to give them a journey that they feel a part of, and they actually feel like there's more to it than just a job, right?
I couldn't agree more. Like, we are still, I don't know if you are, but I'm certain you're probably in the same space as me. We are still the underdog.
Yeah.
But
people
know we can deliver.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't matter what you're trying to do. I know, I'm sure it's the same for you. There is no fence you couldn't build, and there's no fence you wouldn't price.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
In the market, the biggest job, bring it on, we'll do it, no drama. However, you're not the first call for that, because there are longer established businesses that have been around longer, you know, have more money, have more market presence, blah, 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 all of the shit.
Mm-hmm.
Have a more long-standing relationship with the client. You're the underdog. You're fighting for it, but you're fighting together. Your team is all there digging in, you know?
Yeah, and that's the difference, right? That's the difference is I know that our competitors, they don't have the same vision we have. They don't have the same drive, and they're not attracting the same talent that we're attracting, you know?
They're usually owned by 50, 60-year-olds, let's be honest. Like, you know, we're both mid-30s. I'm 38, so I'm not quite mid. I'm more late 30s, but that's okay. But there's not many people in the sphere that are around the same generation. They're all slightly older. Construction is very capital intensive to start up.
Yeah.
Very challenging to scale. And it means that most people at this age haven't gotten to the upper end of jobs.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know... Yeah,
I'm not saying that you can't, you know, don't want to be a dick, but, you know, I've done all right, you've done all right.
Yeah.
You know, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But where the 40s come in and where that's what it's really about as we start to move into that sort of space.
Yeah, and, you know, age is just a number. It's really about how much drive you've got and how innovative you want to be. You know, we're going to be 50 or 60 one day as well, and I'd like to think that you and I are still thinking ahead of the curve the whole way along, you know, or we've at least got people that are doing that for us. You know,
that's a big challenge,
because I think it's about who you are as a person, you know. As long as we're always these type of people,
as long as you're starving and sitting on a podcast on a Tuesday afternoon and you've flown halfway around Australia to be here, you know, and I'm dressed in a pink shirt, which we shouldn't talk too much about the shirt disaster that was happening before here. Yeah, we got some chuckles from the peanut gallery, but that's okay. We're here, we're in pink and we're happy. And you wore your best RM Williams top.
Yeah, mate, we're all RMs. All RMs.
All the sales reps too in RMs?
Yeah.
Every single one of them?
Yeah. I've got an RM polo on under this, an RM belt, RM shoes. I think it's a real Queensland brand, you know?
Nah. Is it built in Queensland?
I don't know if it is, but it's like, you know, people call Queensland the Texas of Australia.
That's what you want to call it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like people trying to make Bris Vegas get off of the ground, which I think is the dumbest name of a city, of a, like, dumbest nickname of a city ever.
I know.
Call it Bris Vegas, you're an idiot.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, Brisbane's got nothing on Melbourne's nightlife, like, I'm sorry to say, but we're getting there. There's a lot of money getting poured in with the Olympics coming up.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice segue.
Yeah, yeah, to the Olympics.
Did,
yeah.
Did you do that on purpose?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Fucking...
This guy's good, eh?
This podcast is going to be great.
This guy's good.
Yeah, no, I'm stealing all of that. I'm going to start the segues like, oh, Brisbane. So I spoke a small amount on the last podcast, which hasn't been released yet. We're going to speak about it again. Mm-hmm. Hit me with it. Brisbane, everyone going there to make money?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There's a lot of money being poured into infrastructure and construction with the Olympics coming up.
A little bit challenging considering as though you get a metre worth of rain every other week.
Yeah, yeah. And I've realised that Brisbane is one of the hardest major cities for construction in Australia. After expanding to Melbourne and looking at how effortlessly things just work here, because, you know, in the month
Shout out to all my Melbourne brothers and sisters who are running the jobs down here.
Yeah, so, yeah. Well, so I'm sorry to say, but, like, you know, Brizzy in the first 90 days this year had 60 days worth of rain. Melbourne had 23. We track all this because I've got to see why Brisbane's not performing to the standard that Melbourne is.
60 to 23.
Yeah. 60 to 23, 800 mil versus 123 mil. Albeit we had Cyclone Alfred. It was the exact same stat last year. We had 60 days.
Do you deep down want to be on the Weather Channel on Channel 9 or something like that?
No.
Are you certain?
No, I wish
123, 800, 60 days, 23 days. No. There's some stats thrown in there.
Yeah, yeah. Like fly up to Brisbane and feel the wall of humidity that hits you when you get out of the plane.
But then you got to get serious, because at the end of the day, the amount of revenue turned over per day per employee that's at work,
yeah,
is it similar down there as up here, or is there still, you're saying Melbourne's better to do work in? It can't just be because of the weather. Of course, the weather plays a huge part when you're almost 60% up,
yeah,
in working days,
yeah, yeah,
not in flogging rain.
Yeah, I've been trying to put my finger on it for the last 2 years since we've been in Melbourne, why they're operating more efficiently than Brisbane. And the weather's a huge factor for sure. And then I think operationally as well, you know, we didn't have those core values aligned. And I think that's been a huge thing.
Is it because you had a smaller, tight-knit crew down here that the guy in charge of it was able, I met him outside, said, g'day. He gave me a like this. Is it because you had like just a few jobs, you said you had a couple of utes, you had a small warehouse, and then, you know, he's probably out there on the nail gun or with a, you know, I don't know how the fuck you build fences, but whatever. Your nail gun?
Yeah, nail gun for timber fences, yeah.
Okay, got it. So he's out there with the nail gun, running with the boys, organising the jobs and everything else, and everyone's aligned and part of this crew.
Yeah. So that's one thing, right? So, like, yeah, he had a consistent vision that all the boys were aligned with him because he was the singular project manager we had down here. Whereas in Brisbane, we had four project managers, all with their own slightly different versions and slightly different standards. And so I think Ben's singular vision that he had down here, just that level of consistency, was really helpful in efficiency, which is what sort of helped us identify, okay, we really need to hone in on these core values and start holding
everyone
to
them. Has it changed? Has it gotten better up there?
Yeah, way better.
Like, can you see it in the numbers?
Yeah, big time.
Because I like making money. Yeah. So, like, if you're seeing it in the numbers because you put some words on the wall that you live by, we have words that we live by. Like, don't get me wrong, and we have values that we chase, you know. But as far as putting them on the wall, we haven't done it. So I'd love to know about what people think. Maybe we'll snip some of this out and make a core value post. Do you have them? Are they working? And if they're working, there's a couple of different buckets you can fill with them working too, yeah?
Yeah.
Like you can have happy employees.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Right?
But happy employees don't necessarily always translate to more money.
No, definitely not.
You know, because I could make everyone super happy out there right now, walk out there and say, everyone, you're going home and I'm buying your lunch. Everyone, yeah. Now, we haven't made no more money.
Yeah.
So happy employees, great. I think that they're a stepping stone to making money, though.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the three key metrics that we're tracking, right, when we set our targets, right? We want to hit a certain revenue number at a certain profit margin with a certain happiness out of five rating. So we do an anonymous survey every month to our staff, and we ask them, how happy are you at work out of five? And we get a rating. An anonymous survey. So it's a really good way to put a metric to your culture.
That's scary for anyone who doesn't do that. Can you imagine sending it out there? How happy are you?
I know.
None.
Yeah.
What is your score at AHV?
We got 4.6 stars today. We had a monthly meeting down in Melbourne, 4.3 stars up in Brisbane. But, you know, anything above four, we're pretty happy with.
You're happy with four? I think that 4.6 and 4.3 is absolutely incredible. And if we weren't on a podcast, it'd be weird. I'd almost shake your hand and say you run a good business.
Yeah.
If you've got happy employees, you're making money. You know,
exactly.
And you're wearing RM Williams, the life can't be all that terrible.
Yeah, it's not. And it's a product by design, you know.
I think I'm going to do that, eh?
You should do it.
After this, send me out that. I'm going to put an anonymous survey. I'm going to send it to everyone. Now, do you get notes put at the bottom?
Yeah, you get people leave comments. So if they're not happy, they might say why they're not happy. I hate working with Dylan. Whatever it might be.
Do you have a Dylan?
Oh, we used to.
Did everyone hate Dylan? No, we're not going to do that. Dylan. RM Williams shop ran out of shirts this week.
Happy. Yeah. And people leave all sorts of comments. You know, you've got to like have a bit of slack in there. I used to get really strung up on if we would someone leave a 3-star or a 2-star. I get really hung up on that. I'll be like, who was that? Like, why? Why didn't we make this person that happy? But you know, people have good days and bad days. And That's the other thing too.
Like I've got a couple of people who work for me at the moment who are having some pretty hard times at home.
Yeah.
They're not – like if you're having shit time at work, it affects your home life, guaranteed. Well, if you're invested and you care about your job, you don't give a shit, then, you know – you go home and, I don't know, do whatever people who don't give a shit do. Yeah. But
all of our guys are invested.
Correct. So if you're invested and you care, then – If home life's tough or, you know, you've just had a baby, you know, 6 months ago, whatever, you know, you don't sleep, not feeling that great at work, you know, your stars aren't going to be five. It's not like I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm killing it. Like, I'm a bit tired today. I might be a 3.
Yeah.
Nothing to do with work, or it might be. And it would be hard to manage that.
Yeah. And I'd like to think that, you know, we've created a culture where the guys can talk to each other about what's going on at home. And I think that all stems from the top. You know, we have one-on-one catch-ups with all our management staff every single month, and we just talk about personal stuff and what's going on with their life and their home and what goals have they got.
We do once a quarter a catch-up with everyone.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's important.
Everyone gets a...
It's not
5 minutes. I'm not going to say 5 minutes. It's 10 or 15 minutes that everyone sits down and talks about, you know, are you happy? Is there anything you're seeing? Is, you know, any negatives? Is there a part of your job that you think can be better or streamlined or, you know? But that brings them in, yeah? Like also at the same time, we're looking to build something together.
Mm-hmm.
How do you build it together? Well, you have to have the person who's in charge of the dockets listen to about what the dockets need to be.
Yeah.
It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, if a guy's got a great idea to build a fence and you're not building fences anymore,
yeah,
he needs the ability to put his hand up and says, hey, I don't think we should use a hammer anymore. There's this thing called a nail gun. And you go, oh, yeah, we'll try the nail gun then.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And how do you get that culture? Well, that's all these things along the way, these little steps that you take that try and make a company good to work for. And
yeah, exactly. Oh. Yeah, people have to feel like they can be vulnerable at work and be honest and open and say what they need to say without getting their head ripped off. And, you know, the anonymous survey sort of circumnavigates that because people will leave comments even if they don't feel comfortable on an anonymous survey. And some people will never want to say something to the boss, you know, like they'll never want to put their hand up and say, hey,
what's
I think
the best
this could
one
be
you've had over the years? Have you had a really spicy one? Now, do remember that this might go out and be seen by a few thousand people, so don't make it too spicy. Maybe knock off the top three, but have you ever had some that have came on and you've just looked at it and gone, shit?
I think the spiciest ones that we've had are when we've had multiple guys calling out a singular person in a comment, you know? So multiple guys calling out Bob, saying Bob's showing up late, he's not putting the same effort as everyone else. And, you know, we've got to trust our guys and know that they've got the best interest of the company at heart as well. And then obviously after a bit of looking into it, Bob was showing up late and he wasn't putting in the same effort as everyone else.
I've had some actually real heartbreaking times. Right, I had a guy who worked for me for over a decade who was, you know, leading a racket, working for me a little bit. He, you know, he was just new people coming on board. He was teaching them some bad things, you know, in terms of there's a way that's nice to the company to fill out a timesheet. Sometimes, you know, maybe they give 15 minutes of, you know, standing around the toolbox. There's the true way to fill out a timesheet, which is every single minute documented and counted and stuff like that. Then there's the other direction. So he was teaching people as they came on, almost as an induction process, how to make everyone's hours look similar. Yeah. And, like, it ends up costing a lot of money, yeah, because if they it add does. Hours, it's always overtime hours.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what's happening.
Especially at scale. It really adds up quick.
And so I found out, and it actually was a bit... I was quite sad about it, actually, because he'd been around since the very beginning. He was one of, you know, probably, I don't know, the first 5 to 10 people who were around. He was one of the... And by the way, of those 10, I've probably still got 5 now.
Yeah.
I had probably had 6 or 7 with him. I've still got my first employee. I've still got my first 2 truck drivers who work for me. They're still going. I actually had a bit of a problem with one today. I rocked up at a site. First employee's there. His name's Rob, right? I've spoken a bit about it. There's Bang Bang was my first truck driver. Then I have Rob, who's my first operator, who's now...
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
67 years old or something like that. Not that capable as an operator anymore because of his eyes. He's just got some eye problems. And so he's out at one of my sites out there looking after it, taking care of the Starbuck perspective out there, let's say. And so I rocked up this morning, had a meeting out there, 6:45. Guys are all out there sitting around having a bit of a chin wag. Rob sits around, 7:20 rolls past, 7:30 rolls past. 6:45. Now, Rob, he's still doing his thing, you know, tinkering, you know, running around. He's never going anywhere. Like, so he's running around doing that. I walked over to the guy who was standing next to him, and by the work, we start work at 7, you know, or quarter to 7, depending on if you do your pre-start before or after. We pay for that. And I said, listen, I've got to draw a little bit of a line here. And I don't really want to draw the line because it's not really fair, but, like, Rob is Rob, and you've worked for me, but, you know, I'm all happy for you to start work 7:15 or 7:10, but we really don't want to be quarter to 8, you know, you screwing around and Rob being the first one working and everything else because he was doing another task. But, and so dealing with those dynamics as well are so difficult because Rob's been with me since the start. Like, Rob's been with me since my early 20s. I'm almost 40. If he wants to be a little bit slower, he can be. And then you have a guy that's been around for 3 months. And then, but it's also not fair on the guy for 3 months.
Yeah.
Because he looks at it and says, well, hang on a second. Like, he's allowed to, like, let's say, take off slowly.
Yeah.
And
yeah, those... You've got to have a standard that you're holding people to.
You've got to have a standard. And so what I ended up saying to him was, is I said, Rob isn't out here as an operator. And he's not. He's out here looking after the site, flagging, you know, a bit of fencing. You know, the signs are designating different spots for what we're doing and blah, 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 some paperwork and that sort of stuff. Tinkering on machines. You're out here as an operator. He was tinkering. You weren't operating. There's the line. That's the standard. Whatever he's doing doesn't affect you. Don't look at him for, you know, staying for how much work you, or what your output is. Just be yourself. I want you operating at 7:15. You know, I prefer operating beforehand, of course. You know, but you don't want a guy sitting there at 7, nail gun at the ready with a piece of timber, and then like this. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, but there is a time when it becomes like 7 o'clock's not going to happen. Maybe 7:30 is a bit late. If you're still just standing around talking shit.
Yeah.
You know, that's not the sort of company you want to run because you're never going to make any money.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really important to have a standard, a consistent standard that you're holding people to. And it's hard to let one person do one thing and not let the other person do the other thing. But I think the important thing that you did in that situation was you held people to that standard and you weren't afraid to have that hard conversation. And hold people to that standard.
And it's super hard because at the end of the day, I've got a bloke who's worked for me 15 years too.
Yeah.
Who's 60-something years old. Like, at the end of the day, we understand we've got to have a standard. But then there's some fuzz around the edge, you know? Yeah. Like, there's a bit of grey.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have a standard of everything like that, but then at the end of the day, on one day out of 6 months, you might not uphold your own standard. Doesn't mean it's thrown out the window.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. There's always a bit of grey, right?
You know?
And I think that's what makes us not a big corporate company, right? And it still makes us a proper team that actually gets shit done.
And I'm sitting there and half a screw's getting loose in my brain because I'm sitting out there, I've probably got $1 million worth of gear on that job. None of it's spinning. And you're just going, woo, sir, like, you know, what are you doing? Like, why is everyone standing around? But maybe it's because I was standing around too. Like, you know, that boss thing that whenever you rock up, everyone's on smoko.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you'll rock up at 9 o'clock. Today they decide they were hungry, went on smoko at 9 o'clock. Tomorrow's 10 o'clock and they decide to push it out to finish off that section and now they're going at 10 o'clock, but both times they're not working.
Yeah.
And, you know, you never really speak about that problem either because it's just... It is what it is. But a bad boss is where they used to rock up and start going off their lid about it. You know, but then you also have to have people working, so there's that standard to uphold.
I know. And I try not get stuck in the nitty-gritty these days, you know. I try and just be results-focused with our staff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is the result we're looking for. And however you get there is up to you. Obviously, you've got to uphold our values on the way there. Mm-hmm. But I want to... trust that you know how to do your job.
You chase KPIs?
Yeah, KPIs, yeah.
So just as a broad overview, like are you chasing revenue for KPIs or...
I mean, look, revenue with the profit margin there
course,
as well.
Of course, yeah. I don't think... we had a bit of this discussion before. I don't think that Profit is unsaid and revenue is unsaid too, but you can't have one without the other, you know?
Like, yeah, yeah.
Revenue might be vanity, but it fucking has to be there, because if I only turn over 50 grand, yeah. even if I make 75% profit, I only made 800 bucks a week.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah, 100%.
Can't have a big company without the revenue being there either.
Yeah.
So I have a big problem or a decent challenge with my revenue because of how we're a bit vertically integrated with a few different things that we do. So if we leverage one side of our business to win the job for another side of the business, whose revenue does it go to?
You know,
like let's say you imported all of your own stuff and then then you install it as well. Who gets it? The guy who's in charge of the importing or the guy who's in charge of install?
Yeah, yeah. Are you doubling up on your revenue then?
And you're doubling up if you count it twice.
Yes.
But what about if you give yourself a really good price to win a job from the importing side, and he's like, hang on a second, you know, I need these numbers on mine.
Yeah.
And the other guy's like, so I have that problem now.
Yeah.
Especially, like, let's say we have a digging job for, let's say, excavation contract job. We have the trucks on site, and then we have the disposal location. Each ran by a different person.
Mm-hmm.
Each one saying, I did my bit.
Yeah. You don't record that revenue three times.
No, fuck no. I'd look like a rich man.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah.
How do you chase that KPI and who gets to fill their bucket with that?
Mm, yeah.
With that money if you're chasing it. So I don't chase it. I don't focus on the I don't focus necessarily on the money side of things. I focus on, which is the same sort of thing, it would be meters installed of fencing for you.
Yeah.
You know, the more the meters goes up, the more the revenues go up. If you've got your profit margin built in, it's all like it's a flow effect. So I chase the trucks, and that's how I track the KPIs there.
Yeah.
So that we don't have that argument, and it fully removes the disposal side and makes them have their own metrics that they have to do, which can be money then.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think every department's got to have their own metrics that ultimately make up the larger goals of the business. And for our construction side, you know, we've got all the projects have got their own budgets, and the project managers are responsible for hitting those budgets, if not exceeding them. And then they've got profit shares on their projects if they exceed their budgets. So, you know, that's how the construction side is sort of held to their KPIs. And then under them, they've got the labor team who will hold to efficiency KPIs as well. So we've got, say, 1,000 labor hours allowed on the project. If they get it done under that, then they get a bonus. And if they don't get it done under that, then we sort of investigate why. And maybe we fucked up in estimating, you know? Mm, or maybe we just didn't do something quite right on the job. Maybe we got a meter worth of rain, you know? Who knows?
Listen to him about the rain complaining again. That's all you do. You say that it's not good because of the rain. But we didn't. Hang on a second. This is what you do in your podcast. You know, long form, it's not going to come out. But for your shorts, you just take just the smallest pause. And you say, back to Queensland, because we didn't speak about that. Like, are you going for... Obviously, the supply chain gets larger when you have a big... It's almost a statewide event at some point, but it's quite a decent footprint of what they're upgrading. It goes right up and down that section of coastline, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Like for 100 Ks up and down or something?
Yeah, with the Olympics.
Yeah, with the Olympics.
Yeah.
So you have a supply chain that all of a sudden has to get more concrete is getting poured and, you know, all of that. We'll just leave it at that part. But what do you see happening there? Because I know a lot of my competitors have moved up there. You'd see a lot of blokes from Vic starting to go up there. But then you've also got a lot of housing that's been released lately up there that's looking to be built when there's not a metre worth of rain too. Do you see Queenslanders going gangbusters now like what Melbourne did sort of 10 years ago?
Yeah, 100%. Queensland is going full on gangbusters. We're working in an industry that already had a labour shortage, and then now with the Olympics coming up, you know, not only do they have to build the stadiums and all the sporting grounds for the Olympics, but all the infrastructure to support them. And then not only that, but Queensland is booming for housing as well. So the industry is just insanely busy. And it just puts even more importance on being a business that people want to work with, because...
Top 5%.
Top 5%, if not top 1%, you know?
Is there 100 fencing companies in Queensland?
I reckon there's probably 100 fencing companies in Australia.
big ones, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. There'd probably be 100 big ones. There'd be a lot of little resi companies. And, you know, that's sort of the importance of social media too, right? Like, how are people going to want to align with your journey and want to work with you if they don't know who you are? And what's the best way to get known these days? It's on social media. And you and I both know that.
My things came, like, very organically. My social media has came about. So, you know, I work really hard in my, as everyone does, like, you know, not saying I'm a fucking unicorn or anything, but I work real hard in my 20s, real hard. And by the end of my 20s, I was cranking.
Yeah.
I was pushing out some work. I'm pushing out some hours. I'm making some money. I'm getting a divorce, but the divorce doesn't really matter. Well, it did at the time, but not so much now. I was cranking. And so everyone gets Instagram. That's about when it came out. And everyone starts posting pictures of avocado on toast and going to the holidays, posting the same pictures of the, I don't know, the Colosseum or the Trevi Fountain. Like, just take every holiday, Bali, Finns, you know, beach club.
Shout out to Finns.
Shout out to Finns. Never been there. If you want to fly me over, I'm all in. But I didn't do that. I dug holes. And I was always digging holes, weekends, nighttime, afternoons. When I wasn't digging, I was fixing machines to get ready to dig the hole. So, of course, what am I putting up? Photos of diggers, photos of trucks. Then a few people got engaged with it, met some people from America who were doing the same thing with some decent online stuff. And then people started to realise that, hang on, a guy in his 20s buying brand new tractors. And he's not just buying one, you know, like I'm buying a few, and every few months there's a, you know, Freshy Friday or something like that.
Yeah.
And then, hang on, he's bought 10 or 15 machines this year. They're a few hundred grand each. Like, this guy's going good. So they jump on, you know, watch the journey start, and then got a bit bigger and did some things like that, pushed on LinkedIn pretty hard. And now I was getting maybe, I would have had to have gotten 10 or 20 people a week saying a podcast or, you know, for videos and stuff like that. I reckon I've got 5 people who have asked to be on the podcast already, and I haven't even released one.
Yeah.
By the way, want to be on the podcast, come on down. I'm not a bad guy.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not if you're the fencing company, though. It'd be a bit awkward.
Despite the pink shirt.
No. Pink shirt's great. Pink shirt's great. My daughters love pink. You know, I'm all about it. Girl dad, loud and proud.
Yeah, me too.
So, yeah, I'm a very lucky man to have 2 daughters. I reckon I'm not the biggest religious bloke, but I reckon if there's a God out there, he sent me 2 girls because I needed them.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so, but that meant that I turned from the guy who's wearing R.M. Williams to a guy who's wearing a pink shirt and actually quite happy with it. So, that's all. But, yeah, now we're here and we get, the reach outs on some things are insane. You know, the DMs, the messages. I can wake up and have 40 DMs on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
Then I'm a bit twisted and hate the little red dot or the little number in the corner. I can't deal with that.
Yeah.
So then I go through, and then I also hate being seen as rude. So then I respond to them.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunities that come through social media. But I think, you know, like you said, you started really organically. And if the reason you start posting content is for opportunities or to make money...
It's not going to come.
No, it's not going to come across authentically. And so you've got to be doing it for the right reasons, which for you and I, we're just posting because we're passionate about the industry and our viewpoints on the industry, and we want to meet and connect with like-minded people. And then the byproduct of that is people want to work with us, and there's opportunities that come here and there, and that sort of stuff happens. So
definitely. I've won a lot of big jobs. Oh, a lot of decent jobs, I'll say. And I've been part of things and gotten reached out to for stuff I never would have been involved in, you know, because of socials, because of whatever reason it is, or people that I've met from it, because it's just a connection tool, right?
Yeah.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
No, and I don't know how people did it 40, 50 years ago when your name was in the yellow pages.
Yeah.
You know, you're for excavators. Yeah, there it is. And you're one of 10 people. And what do? You get the quarter page ad?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Oh, well, that was back in the day when a handshake meant a lot more.
Yeah, well, that's very true too.
Which I know you've spoken about before.
Oh, don't I love myself a handshake? It's just, you know, I think that with from the handshake versus contract, just to really crystallise that up, I've gone into a few fights about some contracts, you see,
mm-hmm.
and they don't mean shit.
No.
You know, like the good contracts lawyers, which I know some follow me, like they can pick apart those things, you know, and then they still have to abide by the laws and the standards and the industry, all of it. And sometimes they're directly against the laws, but you've signed up to it, and then it's just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Why don't we just shake hands and say, you build the fence and I'll pay you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and don't come back to me about anything that you shouldn't come back to me about.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, contracts become even more meaningless for the size projects that we're doing in fencing, right? Like, we're doing projects from 10 grand to 1.5 mil. And generally, like, if you're going to have a contract dispute, it's not worth paying the lawyers or the litigation fees to do it. So it's like, the contract's there and in place and it's something black and white, but ultimately, like, people are just using leverage and making commercial decisions to get the job done. And, you know, we can do all the right things in the world. If a builder says, I'm not going to pay you your last 50 grand, is it really worth us chasing that 50 grand?
Well, that's the problem.
I know.
I don't know. I can't go too far away from the mic. I've got in trouble about it. But I don't know. Isn't those contracts there so that they're there for both parties? If the builder says don't pay and we let him get away with not paying, at the end of the day, that contract was pretty shit start off with.
I know. I think if you play out a lot of these contracts in real life and what it actually takes to enforce them, they're really not worth the paper they're written on. Ultimately, it's about the relationship you have and making sure you're aligned with businesses that share your values as well. And, you know, if a builder wants to rip us off, you know, that sucks, but we're not going to work with them again.
Probably, like, I'm going to say maybe 5 years ago, like, when I started doing the contracts, like, I didn't even know you could rub out anything.
Yeah, neither did I. I was like, just accepting everything.
You know, they'd send me a contract and I'd be like, fuck, I don't even know what that means. Like, and I don't have enough money in the job to really have a look at, you know, the termination and the force majeure or whatever you say it. I'm not French or Italian, so I don't even know what it is. I know what it is now, but you just get them and you go, oh, shit. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Off we go. And then you run into it, and then I don't know if you've ever played pistols or, contracts at 10 paces, you know, like, which is you take your contract and they take theirs, and then all of a sudden you start hitting each other with them. It's all just like, just next level. Like, I dig holes, like, and I truck dirt, and I'm sure you're the same. Like, I just want to build a fence and get paid.
Yeah.
We don't have to make it too hard. You know, we don't have to, but I used to sign them, or sometimes I wouldn't even sign them and I'd complete the job. And I can remember one guy, he wouldn't pay me until I'd signed it, which I get now. But at the time I'm sitting there and I'm going, but I've already done the job and you're happy. And he's like, nah, for compliance, I need them signed. And I'm like, what's in it that you need signed that, like, I can't warranty a hole. Like, you can warranty a fence, right? Yeah. If the fence falls over, you know, bad day. But once my... spat everywhere. That's awkward for the podcast. once I've filled the hole with concrete...
Yeah.
There's no warranty no more. Like, just pay me my money.
Yeah. I think once the contract starts getting pulled out and people are hitting each other with it, the relationship's already sour, you know. We want to avoid that happening as much as possible.
Do you work with anyone, because I know that I do, that are just contract like that at the very beginning? Like, I have people that the relationship isn't even necessarily soured. It's just how they run.
Yeah. You know, and there is certain project teams that are like that from builders. And we've worked with some builders you can tell it's part of their culture, right? Like that's how they operate, and we tend not to work with them anymore.
I think that it's hard to have a fair relationship at the end of the day there. You know, I've got the contracts that you're getting, they're given to you by a builder.
Yeah.
If they're going to lean one way, not leaning our way.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. You
know, and that's okay, I get it. They've got more risk under the head contract than what we got under a subcontract. I get it. I understand. But, you know, the jobs that those, you know, litigious almost, like the people who are all about the paperwork, the jobs that they get are often the big ones.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know. It's so tough. Yeah,
it's important. It's an important part of the industry, and risk management's a huge part of the industry. It's mostly what builders are doing is risk management.
Well, but they don't. They're not holding the hammer no more. Like, no. Or you know, they used to. Even when I started, I used to work for some old school builders that you know, they were building the house like from the beginning to the end.
Yeah,
you know, they could lay tiles and they could pour concrete, and they just couldn't afford a machine to dig the, or didn't want to. In fact, I did work for some on their machines.
Yeah,
yeah, they had the whole lot.
Yeah,
now they don't exist.
Yeah,
you know, I don't think that they can exist.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely not. Not on a large scale anyway.
No.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, the contracts are just an agreement between two parties, right? And hopefully you don't have to hit each other with them. But they can be used as a good tool as well. You know, at least you're setting things
well,
right.
Well, it makes it black and white too.
Yeah.
I like, the scopes are probably more important.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah, to me than a contract. You know, contract is, I don't even, like I said, a force majeure or majeure, or I don't know how to say it, let alone the nitty gritty of what it is or the precedences.
And how to enforce it.
Or the precedences that have been set. You know, every contract has a thing about modern slavery in it. You know, you just go, but there's that's got some bite to it. There's a reason that they're there.
Yeah.
And we've got to make certain that that's all good. But the scope is how we deliver, how we get paid, what we're responsible for. And if you read it in the right mindset, where our risks are, where they think risk is. And then if we can tick off both of those boxes, you know, our risk and managing them and what they think a risk is, our clients, then you're usually pretty good. You usually get paid on time, you know, the job, everyone's happy.
Yeah. This sort of segues into something that I did want to talk about, and it's sort of what my goal is in the industry, and part of why I'm sharing on social media is because I want to destroy some limiting beliefs that exist within the construction industry, and one of them being that retention has to be a part of a project, because I can tell all your listeners right now that we're getting retentions written out of our contracts and written out of our projects, and it is possible to do that.
Oh yeah.
Hey,
you want me to join in right now?
Yeah.
I can join in.
Yeah, I'd love for you to join in too. Yeah,
well, I said, hey, to retention, two parts.
Mm.
Come back to the job before it's completed, even though we've paid you most of your money.
Yeah.
And warranty your product.
Yeah.
I understand more the first one, which is, you know, if they've paid 90% and you've got the hardest 10% left to do, sometimes the math doesn't quite math, and a contractor who isn't us, because we've finished every job, but a contractor who isn't us can sometimes leave them holding the baby.
Yeah, but I think the nature of a free market, those contractors should run out of work, right? You know, if you need to hold money because you think the person you've contracted to do the work is going to do that to you, then you're probably not contracting the right person.
AH will come.
Yeah, that's 100%. Right.
Well, like I just said, we've never not finished a job. And let me tell you, I've been going backwards a million miles an hour. I have had work with the most dynamite projects team that have made like me. Oh, I've lost that much money and continued to come back and finish because that is what we do.
Exactly.
And even though, like, you want to tell them where to go and what to do when they get there. And what about the other one, though? The warranty. If your fence falls over.
Yeah.
Same deal?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Of course. You know, the reason, you know, you think about $1 million project and after you've completed it, they're holding 25 grand worth of retention. I'm not coming back to fix defects because you got my 25 grand. I'm coming back to fix defects because we've got a reputation and we're going to be in this industry for a long time. Similar with the warranty, right? Even if something breaks after a warranty period, we're not here to burn bridges. We've got a reputation to uphold, you know, so we're going to try and do the right thing for everyone. And so that's why I think retention shouldn't exist. Generally, the value of money that they are, you know, 25 grand on $1 million project isn't going to cover anything substantial anyway. It's just a bit of cash flow for the builder, which I understand, but it's also so much more.
I don't understand that part. I'll have to call that part out. You know, that's my money. That's your money.
I know.
That's not their cash flow. And too many, unscrupulous people running companies use the retention as their money and make it impossible to get, fabricating back charges, and it is an industry-wide problem. You know, it's one of the reasons I probably 3-4 years ago, I signed up a different sort of retention, which is as soon as my part can't be warrantied anymore and as soon as I have no work to do, just release it to me in 90 days, 60 days, 30 days. Right? Once the hole's filled with concrete, I can't warranty anything. There is nothing I have to come back and fix a defect for. Once that stage is done, I'm not waiting to practical completion.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's years away. Like, I'm digging the hole.
Yeah, yeah. Practical completion of your scope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completion. Yeah. Like, and once there's nothing that can be done afterwards, bang, that's it.
Yeah.
Because all that happened was is every time I tried to get my retention, there's a problem.
Yeah.
And the problem is usually already been rectified in an invoice that you didn't know about has been generated from someone. I don't know, like we used to have a lot of problem with landscapers fixing levels. Like we dug it at the very beginning. You've had scaffolding, bricklayers, concrete. You've got had that much shit. It's rained. You've put crushed rock and everything else and blah, blah, blah. I have a sign off on site from the levels that when I left them. And now you're telling me I need to come back and fix it. Oh, but wait, the landscaper fixed it, but yet there's a back charge for 10 grand.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah, and you know, I think ultimately going back to why we don't think retention should exist is because these shitty contractors who aren't coming back to fix their work should be weeded out of the market. They shouldn't be held in the market because builders are holding retentions on them and that's the reason they're coming back. You know,
that they're happy to lose that 2.5% because they're cutting corners somewhere else and so they sign up the jobs that they shouldn't get in the first place and are just going around burning the different bridges on the way through. But then when you have a problem like what it sounds like Brisbane's going to go into, when the market gets so busy after 12, 18 months, 24 months, they go, oh, that other fencing company wasn't that bad.
Exactly.
You know, we took their attention.
Yeah, yeah. They got real short memories in this industry sometimes.
Yeah, we should get them back.
Yeah.
Bang, happens again.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
I think you've sold that well. I look forward to making that into a YouTube short about retention and
I think a lot of people in the industry are passionate about it. You see a lot of posts on LinkedIn about it, a lot of comments about it. And I'm not saying we're starting a movement against builders. What I'm saying is we're starting a movement against dodgy contractors who don't come back and fix their work.
That no one's saying that it's the builders' item retention because the builders need that certainty around what the retention is, but the mechanism that they are using to get that certainty is 2.5 or 5% of every claim up until blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
That's the mechanism they're using.
Yeah.
Is there another one? And what is it? And is that mechanism, and as much as you want to wave the flag, you're in fencing in Melbourne or Brisbane, don't worry about your retention, just get AH fencing there and we'll make sure that the job's done well, we'll warranty it, if any defects, give us a call, we'll fix them, no problem.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I started looking into. I was like, oh, maybe there's another type of document we can create to give the client, you know, surety that we're going to come back and fix our defects. And then I realized that's literally the subcontract we're signing. It says we have to come back and rectify all defects. It's the warranty we're giving. We're already giving them the documents to tell them we're going to come back and fix our work if it's defective. So holding the cash retention on top of that really feels like a bit of a pointless exercise and it just hurts the subcontractors' businesses.
Well, the other part of it is there 2.5% that's just added onto every project anyway, which then drives the price up of literally everything, 2.5% or 5%, because of the fact that we have to cash flow that.
Yeah.
I think in a buoyant market, point that I've made is definitely true.
Yeah.
I think in a depressed market, it's on the other hand, because like we're saying, you know, we need the work rather than we need to fight about retention or the builders who are charging that.
Well, that's how they come about, right? Is in a market where it's slow, people are looking for their edge and people who can't offer any value other than price, once they've dropped their price as low as they can go, then they start offering other things like, oh, how about you keep 10% of the money until the job's done then? You know, and I've heard of builders saying, oh, we'll front the cost for the first 4 months of the project. We won't submit a claim for the first 4 months, as well as being on a 1% margin.
Can I just say that you've heard of that? I've lived that. I'm the guy who's there for the first 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
So I think about the questions that I've been asked. And by the way, specific problems with builders and any of that never come out of my mouth on a podcast because I'm not trying to do that. But I have been involved in those conversations. I have been part of those problems. I have been part of the solution.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
To those problems, because you're doing a big project, a 3-year pipeline of work out there. 4 months is a huge thing, huge, massive.
Yeah.
Because you're the whole time they're paying interest on that, and if you withhold the first 4 months, the amount of savings that is massive. The problem is, it's pretty shit for the excavation bloke and the demolisher.
Yeah. Yeah, and the cash flow hit that it impacts these businesses, you know?
Huge.
Like, subbies aren't walking around with tens of millions of dollars in their bank.
Fencing people are.
Yeah, yeah. That's my personal bank account.
Very good. Yeah. Okay, just thought we'd better do that. Excavation blokes on the bones of their ass. I say that we're doing earth-moving charity.
Yeah.
We do it for the love of the dig.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing it for.
And I mean, like, it sounds like we're complaining about the industry, which, like, I want to make clear we're not complaining about the industry. I think we're just passionate about it and we want the industry to be better. And this is part of that.
But we just spoke about it before. We're the new up and coming sort of generation that's got some decent, you know, a decent ability to do things, to, you know, deliver jobs, to, you know, whatever that looks like. And if that conversation comes about around retentions, you know, I've been going coming up to 20 years. I'm not legging it from a job now, you know, like if I was leaving, I'm not leaving at year 20.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
You know, I can remember I've worked for people that have just been terrible.
Yeah.
And if I didn't leave back then, I'm not leaving once, you know, like it's same as you. You don't know the nitty gritties that are happening on the job day by day. You just said you want to be above that and, you know, work on where you're going and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. You're not going to leave a job.
No, no.
No chance.
No. No, and your reputation can be, you know, it takes years and years to build up and can be destroyed in seconds.
100%.
And, you know, like to fix a fencing defect, like fucking we're just going to do it, you know. And like we've got a reputation, we've got chasing perfection written on our cars. We're not going to leave a defect, you know. Surely we get retentions written out because of that, right?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're willing to chase an erection, then you can get you can get the defects written out. It's challenging because, you know, the way that things have been done and for such a long time.
Yeah, of course.
Because how are you going to change it when you just said, you know, like when the market's depressed, you got 10%. You know, someone will offer 10% on a 1% margin or 10% holding, whatever. But is that just what it's been for so long?
Yeah.
And the conversation's never actually come up in this space where, you know, you go, I'm never leaving the job, mate. I'm going to make sure that, you know, I do it. Even if we lose a little bit, you don't need to hold the money to make it, like you said, double down on, you know, the financial pain.
Yeah. Yeah. I think all of that stuff originally stems from those limiting beliefs that I was talking about before. You know, people see their only value as price, and so that's all they have to operate on, you know. And for us, right, when we say to a client we want to write retention out, of course we get pushback, right? But we've got to know in our hearts that we bring enough value to this builder that they're not going to give someone else the contract over this small retention request that we're making, right? If that's the only value we're bringing to this builder is the fact that we're going to give them retention, then we're probably not the right person for that builder, right? And so we know the value we bring isn't because we're the cheapest.
Do you think that that's limited your growth at some points, though? Not that you've had a problem with growth. We've spoken about that. You know, your growth has been pretty good. And I saw a post the other day, 3,000 to 20 million in 7 years, like that.
Yeah.
You know, well done.
Yeah.
But do you think that that's limited your growth at some points when you implemented that policy of no retention? You would have got decent kickback. Surely you lost one or two builders where they're just like, well, our policy is retention, like it or lump it.
Yeah, I think it depends how you look at it. Maybe short-term growth, but long-term growth, it's been a benefit, right? Because we're working on jobs that are more profitable, our cash flow is better, so we can put more money back into the business to grow up faster and work with builders who are aligned with us. So yeah, maybe short-term for that month or those 2 months, the sales team had a bit of a hit, but then ultimately we just did more work for builders who are aligned with our values.
Yeah, and possibly those are the guys you didn't want to work for, so you've skipped down on builders who are so desperate at minimal margin.
Yeah.
You know, because they are doing that 1% that if they don't get the retention, then... the other mechanism to fix it is if there's a law around the retention bank account. You know? Yeah. Because it actually isn't. I've got the problem, not so much with retention, although I think that...
The retention trust accounts.
A retention trust account that says you can't use it and it's not the builder's.
Yeah.
It's mine.
You know? I mean, I haven't personally had to go through this, but I've heard when that's actually played out, right, and a builder does go into administration or liquidation and there's all the money sitting in a trust account, it still takes years to reach the subcontractor's bank accounts, which is a long time to not have that money
I have had millions of dollars go bad. Millions of dollars go bad. I have, you know, had some decent hits over the years. I have never gotten $1.
Yeah.
Not a dollar.
Yeah.
I actually had this conversation. Someone rang up. I put up a post or there was a short or a reel or something. And someone reached out to me and said, Jimmy, I'm in a bit of shit. X, Y, Z, blah, 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 blah. The liquidation administration model is broken.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is to feed the lawyers who are running the administration liquidation process of, you know, whatever fees that they're engaged at, you know, oh, you're going broke for $20 million, therefore we can charge $1,000 an hour. And they keep charging that $1,000 an hour, $20 per page of copy, you know, photocopy, and I know they need a cup of coffee in the office, charge $27 to the liquidation for that. I have never gotten a dollar. We've probably had 30 companies go broke.
Yeah.
It by the time I think it goes, and again, LinkedIn experts will tell me otherwise, but I believe that it goes first person to get paid, the lawyer, the actual liquidator administrator. Second person who gets paid is some employee entitlements, but that's also done by the FEG, which is the Federal Employment Guarantee.
Yeah.
Underneath that, it's banks.
You got the ATO in there somewhere too, pretty high up.
I think that either the banks or ATO is first, but I'm pretty sure that if you have what's the word where they've got the security on it, if you're a priority lender, then you get paid like with the PPSR.
Yeah.
And then last but not least, you're the grubby subcontractor who's owed millions of dollars.
Yeah.
That you never get shit.
Yeah, and like, you know, these builders structure their companies in a way that they're not holding a lot of assets in the entity they're operating out of anyway. And, you know, at the end of the day, what assets does a builder really have, you know?
And this one, like he didn't own anything. You know, they called a meeting at his office and he said, we're going broke and we don't have any money and, you know, we owe $45 million.
Yeah.
You know, and they took me for about $300,000. We owe $45 million and, you know, he doesn't even own a fucking table.
Yeah.
The chairs, the office chairs were leased.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in the office.
Yeah.
And how much equipment do you own for doing fencing? You know, how much equipment do I own for digging a hole?
I know.
And then these guys, they don't even own the chairs. They may as well have not bought pens, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the only thing, they don't own the printer, but they own the ink in the printer.
Yeah.
You know, because that's what they need. Oh, man.
Have you got trade credit insurance?
I did have trade credit insurance, and then they multiple times in a payout. So I used to have trade credit insurance on everything.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear they haven't paid out.
Well, make sure you run to the letter of their law.
Yeah.
Like I am saying to the, if they say on the 13th day that you must stop at 12 p.m. once the sun is in its third horizon, make sure you stop then because I screwed myself. Now I only run trade credit insurance on big accounts.
Yeah.
Because we run so many accounts across the line that, you know, my premiums to have it across the few hundred active accounts that we have.
Yeah.
Was a lot.
Yeah, we've got like a blanket cover that, you know, we've got to apply for the different entities that we're getting covered for, but it's basically a percentage of our turnover is what the premium is.
Okay, yeah, so you've gone, but that's across the board?
Yeah, it's across the board.
And then you run a full, you run to their...
Well, now I got to look into that, right?
So just so you know, from the very beginning, from the onboarding process from a new client...
Yeah.
To the very end, because I used to have a similar sort of cover where it covered everything over a certain amount.
Yeah.
Is what it was. Yeah. I think back then it was 20 grand.
Yeah.
I think
it was. Yeah, it's like 30 grand now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anything over that, I was covered 100%. Until you don't put forward the right check and you just run on with it because it's only a this amount job. But then if the problem's not the first, it's never, ever the first job.
Yeah.
It is always after you've worked for them for 2 years, not a problem, because this is where I ran into it, not a problem. You're putting forward the reports to them. They've never said anything about the reports that you're putting forward that says, you know, ABC Building. But ABC Building's first job was a $5,000 job that you might not have followed the process properly. But now they're doing 35 grand jobs a month.
Yeah.
And then it's all gravy. They get the reports, they never say shit. And then ABC Building go broke and they haven't paid you for 3 months and they owe you $500,000.
Yeah.
And you go, I'm after my trading insurance. And they go, on what? And you go, ABC Building. They went broke. And they go, oh no, you never completed the account application form where we gave you their risk matrix and yada, bullshit, true. Bullshit. And you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
That's close-ish to what happened to me, but that shows you, like, that actually is on you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I guess, technically.
Technically.
I mean, they're an insurer, right? They're going to look for any reason they have to not pay, so I guess it makes sense.
Yeah, but...
But I've got to review these processes we've got now.
Yeah, so, yeah, now we only go over a certain amount because otherwise it was just far too excessive. It changed about 2 years ago, the amount of money that it was. It shot up dramatically and I had to review because I wasn't going to make any money.
Yeah.
Well, the amount of money I was going to make was going to be less than.
Yeah, I mean, the premiums are pretty expensive.
Yeah, the premium, like, that's what I'm talking about. Premiums across the board were a lot.
Yeah, yeah, especially as a percentage of turnover.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's been helping me sleep at night, but now that you've said all this, maybe it's not helping me sleep at night.
Well, there we go. Maybe I've helped someone else other than you. You're going to get over here and you're like, oh my God, please help me.
Yeah.
But it's just an auditing process, right? And it's the things that you're not ever taught in business. And who do you go to find out, like, until you've spoken to someone like me with this specific scenario where I lost money?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And the only lesson that you can, the real lessons that you learn is when you lose money or when you know someone who has and you walk out here and I can guarantee you, you have accounts or you have people that you're working for today that have not followed the right process or the contracts that you've signed up aren't in alignment to your insurance.
Yeah.
And if it's enough money, then they'll tell you where to go and say, sorry, can't do anything about it.
No, it's the first call I'm making when I leave.
But I paid all of this money. You should be covering me. And they go, well, policy on page 6, but line item number 7 says you did not fill out the proper client onboarding form.
I know.
And you go, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I hope that sounds good in the camera as well.
That's a clip, just that little bit.
What time is it, Louis? Oh, it's 10 past 12. We're actually going all right.
Well, when are we done?
Whenever you want.
Oh, sweet. I don't mind. I can talk forever.
Notice. You've actually done really well. Like, he's quite eloquent, you know? That's really good.
I get that a lot. Yeah. Eloquent. Eloquent Adam, they call me.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. No, they do now.
No, I think that especially about the retention, you know, you've obviously sat up at night and written a few text messages about it.
Oh, it's just like gut-wrenching when you have a look at your accounts and you see how much retention's out there at the moment and you're like, fuck, that money would be good in my account, you know?
But the thing is what you could do with it, the security that it would be, and if you're It's a real challenge because, you know, when times are good and work's going all right and everything else and you got some bandwidth and all of that sort of stuff, then what we're saying is 100% correct. But from the builder's perspective, and this is, a, you know, maybe a shout out where I play devil's advocate here, if you are guns blazing at work, your guys are doing overtime, you do not have a spare plank of wood in your warehouse or a spare sheet of color bond.
Yeah.
And a builder calls you up and he doesn't have retention and he's a small builder, you haven't worked for him for that long, but he's never, you know, whatever. Let's say that just all of the stars align and he's not a great customer. He rings up and says, I've got my certificate of occupancy getting issued and they won't do it because the fence is about to fall over and I need you back on Thursday. And mind you, it's Tuesday.
Mm.
He's got retention. I sometimes think that construction has a little bit of a niche underneath that of what leadership means because, you know, it can't always be rainbows and butterflies and, you know, HR in boardrooms.
No, absolutely not. I don't think that's what real leadership is.
No, yeah, but I don't think anyone talks about the fact that you have to stand out on site sometimes and have to tell a bloke to pull his head in.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as you do it in the right way, I'll never say that, you know, because I've been screamed that from more Italian or Irish concreters and everything like that over the years. You think I'm digging holes and they have to pay for this much more concrete. They are pissed.
Yeah.
And I don't think that that's the right way either.
No. No.
But I think that we need to talk about the challenges of what that looks like in construction, which is one of the last places where the HR possibly hasn't taken over that much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I honestly think with solid leadership, you don't need a HR department, you know? HR departments stem to deal with issues that really should be handled by leadership and by management. They should never happen in the first place in reality, right? Like maybe you want to put these people under the HR banner. But, you know...
Well, they might have... Yeah, so whether or not they have a department or no department, you still have HR.
Yes.
Because you do have a portion of your position that is attributed to making sure that these problems either A, go away, or B, aren't existing in the first place.
Yeah.
Which is difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. It's about putting out little fires all the time and not looking at a little fire along the way and saying, oh, I'll get to that later, you know, which is not having that hard conversation you need to because old mate's rocking up at 7:15, you know. You just you see that little fire, you put that little fire out and you just keep doing that all the way and, you know. Isn't it
that's where you come on board and I'll say to you, like I often ring my mates who are having a hard time who run some companies. That sucks.
Yeah.
That's, you know. All you're doing at sometimes is dealing with shit. You know, you don't get to do any of the fun parts no more. You know, you're not sitting down and getting the win of a big job. Yeah. You know, you're not sitting down and having the win of a first job that's been won by a sales rep. Or, you know, the team smashing out the payroll. We have a decent issue with our, not issue, we dealt with it a long time ago, but our payrolls are substantial.
Yeah.
The processing of that data to create that payroll was a real challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like it's not a one size fits all program that you download when we created our payroll systems.
Yeah.
And so when we used to get a huge payroll done, you know, the girls would stay here all night who run that stuff and. Where's the high fives of even doing that anymore? Like, you're just going around and dealing with this little bit of shit and that little bit of shit and this person got a problem here and that,
yeah.
You know, which...
I mean, I love leadership, right? And, you know, dealing with those problems that are, you know, challenging for everyone and they've got to come to you is like, what a privilege. What a privilege it is that we get to be in that position to only have to deal with the most toughest problems that our businesses have.
Yeah. I sometimes say being the boss is the concentration of all of the shit because as you go through the levels, you know, like people can deal with it on the way down.
Yeah.
You know, like if it's just a small problem, then, you know, there's person A is allowed to, I'm sure you've got the same rules in place that, you know, you've got guys who can go to Bunnings and spend 500 or $1,000
yeah.
and don't even call about the $500, right? It's yeah, just yeah. what you need.
Yeah.
But then there's other problems on the way down which are worth more money and more drama and more thought needed. And then it finally gets down to you and it is the most concentrated version of shit that you could get, the problem yeah. of it, that yeah. you're that's all that ends up coming to you sometimes.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
And that's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, and I try and focus on the context of the problem and not the content. You know, I try and look at where is that problem stemmed from a contextual point of view, not necessarily why are people spending too much at Bunnings. It's like, where does it stem from, you know?
Yeah, well, why aren't we prepared enough that we're still going to Bunnings? Like, come on, guys, we've done a few kilometres of fencing in our time. We really shouldn't be needing to go to Bunnings. We should be making sure that, you know, every ute's stocked or whatever it might be along the way. Yeah. You know, why am I still running out of fuel in things? Like, that's one of the things. Or keys. So keys are the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
Because I got... Okay, so all of the keys are the same in machines. Everyone knows that you're locking them. And then you're taking your keys with you. When anyone who wants to steal it just goes to the dealership and buys a key, or goes on eBay and buys a key, or most likely just has a key that he found on site.
Yeah.
Why are we locking the things, you know, like...
Yeah, yeah.
It makes no sense. It's got a push button in it. Like, all you got to do is start it. And,
yeah.
But you've taken the key, and now with the new operator's gone out there and he didn't... Oh, I can't. Or fuel.
Yeah.
We have processes for fuel coming out of every hole we got.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I bet.
Redundancies on redundancies, and we still, very rarely, the other day I had a site with 5 machines that ran out of fuel. 5.
Yeah.
Every single person was on site, has been with me multiple years, knows the processes. I have 1,000 litres on site that, you know, is meant to be the... You know, the safe fuel that, you know, in case the delivery's late or whatever else, they all have utes that have tanks that need to build when the diesel tanker comes. They used that emergency fuel last week. They all didn't get fueled up because they bought their personal cars to work.
Yeah.
Left my car. Like, why?
I know. And you're talking about all the content, you know? And if you change the context of what you're talking about, right, to why do I have to fucking deal with all these problems, to... What a privilege it is that I get to deal with all these problems because I'm running such a large business. It feels a lot better. It's coming from a better place. And you really got to change that meaning inside you. You know, you can't just say it. You really got to actually believe
feel it.
Feel it. Yeah, you got to feel it. That's
100%.
Right.
And are you happy to deal with it? And then from the other side of that, 99% of the time, those 5 blokes kill it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
And are you going to set them on fire for, you know, running out of fuel once, and then we ended up, it was about 45 minutes that, you know, all of the machines were down, the boys all took lunch together, and then I got separate text messages where I didn't know about the problem as it was happening. I found out about it later, which, like, I couldn't quite understand how we did it. But then I got separate text messages saying, hey, Jimmy, just letting you know, today, sorry, I didn't let people know. I know that I was meant to do it. I got a bid on my pre-start. I didn't do the pre-start as accurately as I normally do. ETC, ABC. What a great company we run. We fixed the problem in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Everyone was happy. Yeah. You know, everyone's accountable for that stuff, which is the other thing of own it for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know?
And
I mean, I think as business owners, we have got this underlying fear that we're going to lose everything that we built. And so we're naturally looking for the problems that are happening. And as you said, we're looking at the 5% that the guys are doing wrong and not the 95% they're doing right. And I can say that I operated that way probably for the first 6 years of the business. And it's only been recently that I've changed the meaning in my head of, you know, we've actually built something really great and we have amazing staff. And when something goes wrong, there's probably a good reason for it, or anyone probably would have made a mistake. And it's allowed me to let go of control a little bit more in the business and give the guys a bit more freedom.
The control's the difficult part because my big sales point around the trucks was how fluid I was with them. And competing against more established, larger organisations who didn't have the control over their trucks because they had so many through their dispatch teams, I had really close control.
Mm-hmm.
So as I've gotten bigger, I've needed to standardise, which has brought in a different sort of control, however, has allowed the scale, but has stopped some of that flexibility.
Yeah.
And... That, but it also means that I can have my life back because I lost quite a bit of my life as you're trying to organise all of your shit, and I was probably turning over, you know, 20 million, 25 million bucks. Life was terrible. I was over the top of every single job and stuff like that. And at that stage there, I just went like, you know, someone's got to take care of that part. Someone's got to take care of that part.
It's the only way to go. You got to let go of control.
Well, I'm going
to
end up having a mental breakdown.
Yeah, you can't do it all.
You can't do it all. And then you have your good employees that you've got to make sure that aren't doing the same thing for what they're taking care of.
Yeah.
Because I'm certain you've ran into, or still possibly have, because I know I do, employees that are so, they've owned it almost too much, their little section.
Yes.
And you need to make sure that...
Yeah, 100%.
And that's
part of the leadership coaching, right, is I'm trying to coach my management staff the same way that I'm getting coached, you know. I'm trying to coach them to let go of control as well, because, you know, if you want to be the best project manager you can be and run 20, 30 projects and not just your 10 or 15 and get the profit share from 20 or 30 projects, then... the only way you're going to do that is by letting go of control and start coaching some of your site managers, you know?
Yeah, and it works its way down. And the problems that we used to have, they're now having, to which you're trying to put down another rung of the ladder.
Yeah,
which but it then trickles down. Everything to elevate on the way up. Exactly. And then you are richer than what you are.
Yeah, exactly. It trickles all the way down. And that's the whole thing, right? The business is a reflection of who you are as a person, right? If you're not embodying those things yourself and demonstrating them to your staff, they're never going to do it either.
What was one of your other core values that leaders from the front or lead from the front?
That's right, yeah.
I am a huge believer in that. I used to think it meant that I'd drive the trucks and dig the holes.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that.
No.
You know, it means, you know, if I want people to... you know, perform at a certain standard, I hold myself to that certain standard.
Exactly.
You know, and that I'm available to help them, but I also do what I say and say what I do. Is it, you know, some decent things that we have, not written on a wall, of course.
No, I love that.
But, you know, if I'm telling you take care of a job.
Yeah.
You're taking care. I actually had the conversation just yesterday with someone and we don't have something written down about their job. It's about $10,000, less than $10,000. And I said, I'll speak to my sales rep about it and I'll stand by whatever he says.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're like, well, what's your company policy? And I said, we have our policies, but we also have the ability for our sales reps to extend those policies and to enter into arrangements and agreements on site about certain things. And if he says it, then that's not a chargeable line item, okay?
Yeah.
And he's like, really? And I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that's the company I want to run. But if you're dealing with one of my guys or girls and they say something, I'm backing them. It's not always good. It's not always about wiping off $8,000 or $10,000.
No,
yeah?
No,
like,
of course,
sometimes it's charging it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And that's just the way that it goes. But that's what I want to run. I talk about empowering people and empowering employees and allowing them to run their own race and do their own thing with my support in the background.
Yeah.
Then you have to live by that.
Yeah. No, I love that. I absolutely love that. And we talk about in our business, you know, trusting your gut and really, really leaning into your gut decisions, right? And if one of my guys comes to me and says, like, my gut's just told me, no, we can't do this job, or I need to do this, I say, yep, sweet. If you really know that's coming from your gut, I'll go with that.
One of the girls came to me and said, I'd really like to win this job. Really like it. Profit skinny, you know, but, you know, we don't want to talk too much about lost leaders, because every job's a lost leader, because we never make anything. First moving charity. But... you know, you sit down, you talk about it. She actually put together a little tiny presentation about who they are, what they do, how they do it, where they're going, where they came from.
Yeah, nice.
And halfway through it, it's just like, come on, go win the job, yeah? Don't keep clicking across of different jobs that they've been on or what the, you know, or the conversations that they're having. We're not quite as strong in that area with our labour force. However, we can get it done, go get it done.
Yeah.
You know, and we won it. I think we killed it. I'm pretty certain we did, because I did check in with her about it and we did well, and we've won another one.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it's in our stronger area of, you know, the state, and in which case now we can make some money back.
Yeah, I mean, that's a testament to your leadership, you know, and the fact that your people can feel that they can come to you with those sort of opportunities, and they're putting the extra effort in as well, and they want to back themselves. Like, that's obviously, that's incredible.
Just back yourself in. I think that was another one of yours, wasn't it?
No.
Damn, that's next time. Well, I think that an hour and a half's enough. I thank you very much for coming down. I don't know if we awkwardly handshake now on camera or like this, but I do appreciate you coming down. I appreciate you talking to me, you know. I think you did way better talking than I did. You should run the podcast. AH Fencing.
Oh, you're a legend, mate. Cheers.
Thank you. And terrible handshake. We'll do a better one later. But if anyone wants to be on the podcast every time, I need a backlog of people. I've got a few, but a few more. You know, throw your bid in and say, you know, it was a great time and, you know, you're going to make heaps of money. Come on.
Yeah, it was a great time and you're going to make heaps of money.
Perfect. And I'm not paying for anything. So... come down. Love to speak to people. I had a great time. Thank you.
Yeah. Cheers, mate. Thanks.
Done.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.